Thank you very much for being here. We have been developing to build a modeling framework at very high spatial resolution at the point scale of 56 meter resolution using EPIC model to evaluate the different biofuel systems. Today I am going to present one of its many applications, that is integrated assessment approach to identify the potential margin lands for alternative biofuel crop production. For this research, the affiliation is with the Joint Global Change Research Institute at Pacific Northwest National Laboratory and Environmental Science Division at Oak Ridge National Laboratory and Department of Agriculture, Food and Resource Economics, Michigan State University. My presentation follows like this. First, I will start talking about what is the motivation for considering the margin lands for alternative biofuel productions, and then present some of the different approaches and their limitations for identifying the margin lands. And then I explain why we need an integrated system approach, and then objectives, and then describe the EPIC modeling framework we have been developing, and explain what is our integrated approach. We don't have a complete results, so I will show some of the preliminary results we have for the study area, and then conclusions. Motivation for considering the margin lands for biofuel production. ESA Energy Independent Security Act of 2007 mandated about 16 billion gallons of biofuels from cellulosic biomass in addition to other biofuels. So it is estimated that we need about 21 million hectares of the land to meet this requirement based on the mature switchgrass yields. So where are those lands? That is the motivation. I mean, the researchers believed that if we bring the low productivity land like margin lands into energy biofuel production systems, it would not conflict with the food demands. So that is the main motivation. Different approaches and limitations. Some approaches are very simple and subjective. If you see the left side figure, those are the lands under conservation reserve program in 2007. So it is believed that the CRP lands are low productivity lands. So simply bringing the low productivity lands for the energy production system is enough. That's simple. If you see the another approach is analyze the land use change behavior. And these margin lands are so flexible and transition in nature. So based on the market, the farmer make a decision whether to put the crop or leave as idle land. If you see this right side figure, this is land use change from 2006 to 2008. If you see the northern prairie states, the red color showing that some of the pasture lands converted to the crops from 2006 to 2008. That means due to this increased corn prices, farmers put the crops under those lands because they are making the profits. So those are the lands, the margin lands. And there are some quantitative approaches like USDA Sorgho, they provide soil digital data like different soil characteristics. So that includes soil productivity classes like soil land capability classes. So the class 1 represents the highest productivity and the class 8 represents the lowest productivity of the soil. So during the initial stages of the CRP program, some researchers try to identify the margin lands. So some researchers use the greater than class 5 to identify the margin lands. Some use the greater than 4. So there is a lot of uncertainty. And within the each class, these classes are so broad classes. So within the class also, some of the margin lands, some of the productivity lands. So this is a limitation. The right side one is Another similar concept, that's a national commodity crop productivity index. This is differs from the land capability classes. I mean, this is like continuous gradient it has when compared to the these land capability classes are broad classes. This has a continuous gradient. And I would like to show this graph to show one of the limitation of these quantitative approaches. These are the this graph shows the crop yields distribution. That these are the simulated crop yields from the, our EPIC modeling framework under different land capability classes. If you see the land capability class 5, the yield supposed to be decreased when compared to the land capability class 3 and 4 because those are high productivity lands based on these capability classes. But the modeling framework showing higher yields because maybe those lands are productive, but they have some kind of restriction. Like these are wetlands. If we drain those wetlands, they are ready to go for the cultivation. So why we need an integrated system approach? The ESA mandate requirement is so high for these biofuels. Like it's very to meet the requirement of the ESA mandate, it's challenging to balance the food security and sustainability. I mean, bringing some of the margin lands into growing the corn ethanol may induce some of the environmental impacts. So on the other hand, we need a 21 million hectares of the lands to meet the ESA requirement for the cellulose biofuels. So if we convert some of the crop lands into this to bring the energy crops, it conflicts with the food demand. So there should be balanced. I mean, it's difficult and it's challenging to balance those two. We are talking about sustainability and the food security, but farmers' perspective is different. Their decisions are mostly like economic-driven decisions. They don't mind they don't mind it's a high productivity land or low productivity land. They just like, as long as they can make the profit, they grow the crops on that. This graph shows the percent distribution of the crops under different land capability classes in 2008 in Michigan. If you see, even after land capability class 4, there are like different commodity crops growing. That means the farmers are managed to get the profits. Otherwise, they don't put the crops on those lands. It's a very complex decision. So we need a system that interacts all these economics and these environmental impacts, to analyze the each land unit to make a decision that how the farmers' decisions are influenced by these interactions. The main objective is take the each field and simulate the crop yields and different environmental variables under different management practices, including conventional management practices and bioenergy production systems, and using the EPIC model, and perform that economic analysis of that output for each land unit for these different cropping systems under different management practices, and build a decision support system to identify the potential agricultural land for alternative biofuels. EPIC, the first developed in 1984, later on they included so many subroutines into that. Each subroutine estimates different variables like different greenhouse gas emissions, soil erosion, and nutrient movement. We take the high resolution land cover data at 56 meter resolution, and soil digital data, Sorgo data, and high resolution climate data at 1 kilometer climate data, and topography data, we superimpose each other and combine the data and build a 56 meter resolution modeling unit. And then for that modeling unit, we build the scenarios. I mean, different scenarios different crop rotations and different fertilizer practices and different tillage practices and different conservation practices, and build the different scenarios. Like we built the 73 scenarios and pushed those each land unit and these management practices into clusters and run the EPIC model and estimate the output for each land unit under these 73 scenarios. So we have the all these input for all these cropping systems under for each 56 minute resolution spatial unit. For this modeling, the modeling framework we just published in Global Change Biology recently. And this is the study area surrounding the, this is the 9 counties surrounding the Kellogg Biological Station. And we use the 9 counties for the building this modeling framework. We use Kellogg Biological Station experimental data to calibrate and validate our results from the EPIC. So we have the output for different environmental variables and crop yields for each land unit. The idea is to take those output for each 56 minute resolution land unit and build the economic budgets for different management practices, including the conventional management practices and bioenergy management practices, and see which management practices and which cropping systems make a net profit for that land unit. First we see the net returns from the conventional cropping systems for that land unit. If there is no net return, there is no profits for that net return, then see how much profit farmer can make if he put that land unit into the switchgrass. If that profit is greater than the CRP incentives, maybe farmers is interested to grow that land into the switchgrass production. The challenging thing is, if there is a profit for that land unit from the conventional cropping systems, so how, what are the lands we can put into the potential switchgrass production? So the idea is to see that, to set that different profit margins, like 10% profit margin, 20% profit margin, 30% profit margin, and estimate the different greenhouse gas emissions, net greenhouse gas emissions and erosion levels at the different profit thresholds. And set just to see, is there we can influence legislation to put the carbon price, so thereby farmers can, incline to grow the switchgrass on that. So for this presentation, I just use the crop yield data because we have the environmental variables, but still we did not validate it. So I just use the crop yield data. The EPIC output is from the average from 1978 to 2003. So we build the cost of production for different cropping systems, average cropping system from 1978 to 2003. And there is no market for the switchgrass. So the economist estimated that it would be like $60 per one ton. So we use that one. So I'm showing some preliminary results for that study. These are the mean crop yields simulated from the different cropping systems. The border, the green border shows the conventional tillage, and blue border represents the no-tillage practices. So the EPIC captures the trend that the no-tillage practices having higher yields compared to conventional tillage. The average biomass, simulated biomass from the switchgrass is 10.8 tons per hectare. These are the margin lands for switchgrass production. These land units doesn't make any net returns based on our assumptions. So in this graph, different colors showing that different percentage of the profits farmer can make if he put the switchgrass on these lands. the total of 17,000 million hectares. If we make some legislation to fix the carbon price and said that like less than 10% profitable for the commodity crops, if we put the less than 10% profitable commodity crops, so there would be like a 55,000 total available lands for potential for the switchgrass production. And this figure shows what would be the optimum cropping systems. I mean, what for the each land unit. So this figure shows that if we grow the like corn, soybean, no-tillage for this land unit, that makes the highest profit. I mean, this northern right side county behaving like differently from other data. So we are trying to investigate what is going on this one. Maybe soil characteristics from the Sargo or something, we are investigating that. And the conclusions, margin lands are dynamic. So it shows transition lands. They can change from the market. The objective is to integrate the output from the EPIC modeling framework with crop economic budgets for identifying the margin lands. Based on the assumptions we made, I mean, there are like a 17,000 hectares of potential margin lands. If only consider non-profit lands for commodity crops, there are about 55,000 potential lands if 10% of profitable lands for commodity crops bring into the switchgrass production. So in this study, we did not include the environmental variables. I mean, this is a very interesting study. The future work is estimating the total amount of net greenhouse gas emissions for different profit margins for each land unit and find what would be the optimum carbon price. The acknowledgements. Thank you.
I'm just curious, why 56 meter spatial resolution? Why not 60, why not 50?
It's a very good question, because the land cover we selected is 56 meter resolution. We want to maintain that 56 meter resolution for all other input parameters. So, and 56 meter means, I mean, we are trying to estimate for each field. So we are trying to get the best high resolution, more homogeneous land unit we can create.
Nowadays you're getting new high yield varieties of corn, sorghum, how confident you are with your yield functions?
We are trying to take the experimental data. Estimating, simulating state by state. I mean, this study just focus on Michigan Rima region. So this is only set up between the management practices. So we can set up that yield levels. And also we are doing the validation with the Nass County average data. So just to see how our model simulating the yields for each county. Yeah, obvious. I mean, we have to study that one. I mean, we have to keep in that mind. That's a really good thing.
So, isn't the whole point of the CRP was to save marginal lands? So, first of all, the work is very interesting.
Thank you.
And clearly, exploring about the potential for biofuel production is very important. But isn't it true that this CRP was to save marginal lands from environmental damage?
Yeah.
You mentioned that you were going to now do the environmental damage, but taking those lands which are maintained, right, out of production, and putting them into any kind of production, right? So that's a big trade-off. So then that leads me to my second question, which is, it seems as if the amount of biofuel production that you were finding, that could actually be possible vis-a-vis the profitability, et cetera, is actually quite small.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, this is for only 9 counties. That is the reason we are trying to build a system to make how we can meet this requirement. These are requirements. You are right. CRP lands are low proto lands. So we build the system, what is the net greenhouse gas emissions if we bring the CRP lands into the biofuel crop production system. So we are trying to simulate those environmental impacts if we bring those CRP lands into the biofuels. Yeah.
Thank you.
Is there time to ask Dennis Tim?
Yeah, Dennis is over.
Sure.
Okay. Dennis, about the group distribution that you described. This is a dynamic system. So over time, as the crop grows, it's an annual crop. Group distribution changes in depth and in density. Proliferation groups over time. How is that taken into
account? So it's a finite element model, so you have these cells, two-dimensional cells. Each cell has a root density in it. And so we have the plant allocates a certain amount of carbon to root growth. And then that root growth is, and then if there's any kind of water stress, it'll allocate more carbon. So you have a carbon is translated into a length. And then the length, it's almost like a diffusive model. The length will diffuse throughout this system.
Length per unit volume of soil.
Length per unit volume of soil. The amount of length is determined by the carbon availability. Now, there's no death. It all stays alive, so to speak.
So there's no senescence?
No, nothing like that yet, and that's a limitation.
And all of the roots are, the entire root length, of equal permeability?
Equal permeability. Except, well, they have young and old roots. After the root is about a week or so old, it translates to an old mature root. And the mature roots have a lower permeability than the new roots. So a lot of times the new roots are going to focus around the tips where a lot of the nutrients, the nitrogen uptake from the new roots is also higher than from the old roots.
How do you account for the increasing depth of the root system, the increasing density?
Well, it's what I call a pseudo-diffusive model. So you think about the you concentrate at the tips to where there's root, any root length in any cell can accumulate carbon and grow from that cell, but it winds up where the favorability grows is where there's the low root density is lower. So it's almost like a front, a diffusive front that expands down into the soil and expands outward left and right. And it's a function of also the favorability of the cells for growth, temperature, cell temperature,
and
water, actually both water matrix potential, which affects the strength.
And nutrients.
And well, right now I don't have it tied to nutrients, but that should be the next one. To be honest with you, this is taken from Glycem. Our soybean model had this root, which is a model which is taken from Rhizos. And Jakob and I translated it to 2D soil, to the finite element, taken it from Rhizos to a finite element model. And I haven't really I have to really look at how this all goes. Right now it's a sort of diffusive model, but we're looking at actually doing something like Jonathan Lynch has, which is you have that model that's more dynamic in terms of it's what they call it, it's like vector-driven growth, and that's the other alternative to doing it that way.
I don't have a question, but after everybody else has had a chance to ask a question, I'd like to make an announcement about next year's biological system simulation meeting.
Okay, so Sasha, a question?
For me.
Trying to reconcile your idea about putting nitrogen limitation into photosynthesis. Are you trying to bring it in the Farquhar framework or as a stress factor?
No, as the Farquhar framework, it's actually you adjust, you can call it a stress factor. You have an equation for Jmax. Jmax is a function of temperature. It's an enzymatic reaction. And Jmax is what the maximum photosynthetic rate is. One is the Grubisco regeneration, and the other one is the light capture part. So if these things are actually within the equation, if it's adjusted, there's a parameter Jmax, which is then it's multiplied by a temperature function that reduces it. So Jmax is what they say Grubisco regeneration rate would be at optimum conditions, and then temperature will reduce it downward, based on from the optimum, and then nitrogen is another thing, which actually is a number that goes from point. It goes from 2 to 1, or 2 to very low numbers, and that adjusts Jmax.
My difficulty in understanding is because both the process, carbon fixation and nitrogen fixation, kind of commutative process.
Well, there's no nitrogen fixation because it's corn. So all you have is you have nitrogen, and the nitrogen is going to be part of the Grubisco, right?
The nitrogen, dinitrogen, or inorganic matter.
Yeah.
Inorganic matter. It's a Haber-Bosch process, you know, it creates a lot of energy. And that happens within the chloroplast, you know, where the photosystems are. And before it go into the ATP produce, it go into chondrite cycle, you know, the nitrogen fixation takes place. So,
the nitrogen to make it in the chloroplast to nitrogen?
The reduction, hydrogen reduction.
I'm sorry? Okay.
Transfer the chloroplast into that. So, is it not a covalent process, you know, carbon fixation as well as nitrogen fixation?
Sure, they go together, and that's you're talking about another level that we may not go to yet, but we're looking at it, say, what the theory of the way it goes here is that nitrogen is needed for Rubisco. Actually, Rubisco is some big nitrogen component, and that's why under elevated CO2, they find that you don't need as much Rubisco, so that's why a lot of people say there's not as much nitrogen demand at elevated CO2. So what happens if you don't have enough nitrogen, you don't have enough Rubisco, and then that's going to reduce the photosynthetic sort of rate, so to speak.
Yeah, just one more. So how it differ from the cryophosphate utilization? Is it the same work together?
I don't think we use that right now in the model. We have only to see the FARPAR model has those three, has triosphosphate utilization, and then has the light regulated reactions, and then the Rubisco regeneration. And that third one's more minor, that triosphosphate one, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
That we actually don't even use that right now. We have it sort of turned off.
That kind of is a limitation of nitrogen, because otherwise enough nitrogen is there for other metabolic process, the carbohydrate goes into storage, and it kind of, the loop will be, the photosynthesis will be reduced. So I would consider that also similar to nitrogen limitation.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, correctly. I mean, essentially, with everything, it's pseudo-empirical in a way, because all we've done is we've taken, what we do is we measure the nitrogen on a leaf, and we run it through at 6400. We measure the nitrogen, we take an ACI curve, you measure the photosynthetic response at different light and CO2 levels. And then you take that, you measure you destroy it, then you dry the leaf. After you take the leaf off, you dry it, you measure the nitrogen content. So then you have, what you do is you just fit the way you fit that equation, the equations for photosynthesis, the Farquhar equations, to that leaf, given the different nitrogen contents. And then you see what each nitrogen, then you wind up with a nice curve that shows nitrogen content and what those coefficients are, the Jmax. For example, if Jmax is really, I mean, I call it an enzymatic reaction, but it's still a correlative relationship, but on a different scale. And so you're getting it by measuring something in the lab and just kept making equations and then fitting that equation. And so that's all we've done. You fit it at different nitrogen levels. But going at Sundesco, well, that would definitely be the way to go. You know? I don't know what that will myself. I'm sort of like playing at it.
Okay, so any other questions for further speakers? Maybe we'll make an announcement now.
Okay, yeah. So,
Okay,
so next year, the 41st annual meeting of the Biological System Simulation Group will be at Austin, Texas, at the home of the Texas Advanced Computing Center, which is the largest computing center in the world dedicated to open science research. And so some of the suggested topics for the meeting will be range from numerically intensive modeling application or applications that involve hooking models together to modeling bioenergy fuel crops. And so I have a few brochures that I'll leave here by the projector if people want to take them and get information. There will be a website available on the 1st of December that will have more information.
When is the conference?
I'm sorry. The conference is from the 19th through the 21st of April.
I think you all, if you remember, Scott, an invitation to the book launch and reception for the handbook, Climate Change and Agro Ecosystems, that Daniel Hillel and I just have edited. It's based on one of the A3 symposia of last year, in which we had a full day of looking at climate change and agroecosystems impacts, adaptation, and mitigation. And all of those 20 papers are in the volume. So tomorrow, after the A3 symposium on using the genomic information, right in the same room, we're having the book launch and reception from 5:30 to 7 in room 103A. So everyone please join, and we'll put some flyers here too.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, announcements? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much.
John,